after me. I probably need a lot more looking after, but we'll hope that's covered it.
Well, sounds good so far.
So what I will do, because I'm going to actually have them use that third page, the worksheet thing, but then they won't have a clean original, which I know they can go and print off if they want, but I want them to go away with one, so I'll have, we can give these up as a sort of second handout.
Sure.
And,
hi there. Are you here for this one, Troubleshooters?
No, which is...
I may have changed the title a bit.
Is,
if you're in the...
Small groups in front of you.
That, I believe, was this morning.
No, that was different.
Do you mind if I look at your schedule for a second?
Yeah, what I bring to myself.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, the schedule here might be a little more clear. So, small groups in the context of discipleship is this morning.
Oh, that's a good one.
So then, this one here is program coordinators. Yes. Or there's also in this room right over here, we have multi-level loops and back in Bosmark. This one is here, this one is the discussion
the one told us that he doesn't.
You didn't get enough of me at lunchtime?
Oh yeah.
Did you pick up the
I know it's. I need to go back to that previous session about capitalism and how bad it is. So, sorry about that. So what I did is I brought these would be the blanks that they'll have to take away because they'll write on this one. They'll be using this one, so that's why I'm leaving.
Okay, gotcha.
So those are extras. I have lots. We won't run out.
Yeah, there's lots. I've got to make sure that the live stream reader. So she'll get
No, make sure I
know just the stable one. Yep, you're good.
So Emily, you tell me when we're safe to go.
All right, I'm just going to make sure everyone's live stream is here.
Thank you. How are we doing?
Not so good.
Sorry for the delay. We're just working out the live streaming aspect. You're not interrupting. We haven't started.
Sorry. Thank you.
We're quietly waiting. I'm sure it's true. I accept that compliment. Doesn't TV make you look fatter? But it is critical that we wait, is it not? More or less?
Well,
it would be annoying for those who
if
are looking for it.
If they can see the presentation, then that's good. It's just, it seems that they can't.
Oh, is that the only issue at this point?
Yeah, I can't tell if they can see it or not because I can't communicate with them right now.
Okay.
So that is the issue.
So is he making a...
He's already Scott. That's why he can't help us.
He is...
He's doing the other session.
Caleb. Yeah, he's doing the other session. So he's going to get Caleb for us, who is our tech genius. So... Okay, Chris says that it's working, so I'd say go ahead and start, and then we'll get the others.
And all this miscellaneous stuff will just be edited out, right?
That's right.
Awesome. Good to hear. Well, good afternoon, everybody, and a special welcome to those of you in Screenland. We, of course, have no idea what time it is where you are. For us here in the real world, it is right after lunch. We had a huge breakfast. About 15 minutes later, a huge lunch. So this is the dreaded hour for a speaker. My job is to keep everyone awake.
Yeah.
Now, for those of you who are watching this later as a video in the comfort of your home or your church, of course, you can stop and take a rest. But we welcome you, too, if you're seeing this some future time. Good to have everyone here in whatever setting, and let me open with a word of prayer. Lord, guide this discussion, and which I hope will be a discussion, but we also pray there will be some content, some good takeaway by your mercy. You be the teacher here by the Holy Spirit. Help me to be useful as the under-teacher. We pray there will be some things that will be able to be put into practice right away and be part of a tool bag that will also last for perhaps years. So that's a high standard. We know that you can lead us to it. So use this time and use the rest of the conference as well. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. So it's lovely to have you. My name is Dan Williams. I led my first small group in 1976. Yes, I am that old. And that was just a few months after becoming a Christian. And I've been involved in groups ever since. I've been a lifer. My first professional ministry assignment was as a coordinator of a small group program. Lots of people in my era got their start in that kind of thing. This was the 80s, kind of a golden age of small group work in churches. Some of you may know that. And it was a lot of hard work, challenging work, in some ways inventing stuff that hadn't been done before. I was involved with equipping of leaders, coordinating administratively the program, people getting into groups, getting out of groups, and also a lot of curriculum writing for the study side of small groups. I went on from that experience to do a lot of training in the golden age of the 80s and into the 90s. And even dared to do some writing. This is shamelessly capitalistic, I was joking earlier, I need to go back to that session before lunch where we were taught that capitalism is bad. Apparently I haven't learned that lesson. So anyway, sometimes people find it useful to have the material. So I have brought along at fabulous prices. Let me tell you one more story about publishing. This is to encourage you if you ever want to do some writing in this area or some other area of the church's life. I say this not to boast, but only as a kind of perspective, interesting perspective on this. I thought these books were dead because they're old. I'll be honest, I wrote them a long time ago. But they live on electronically. My largest royalty on this, both of these books, was last year, after 20 years. Now, I tell you that story partly for any aspiring writers. Yes, your book may last for a while, even if it's only electronic, which is very popular today. But I also say it to say that I think we're maybe in kind of a renaissance of small groups. Maybe we're into a new, this is the second wave of groups. Now, maybe I've just been out of the loop, but my experience has been that the whole small group programs, especially in traditional churches and classic small group programs, were kind of quiet for a while. That's my own experience. I'm not sure your experience. In the 80s, there would be a training conference like this. There would be four or five in Vancouver every year. Many of them would be well-known people coming from out of town to do their sort of traveling show. And then some of them were homegrown, some things I even organized. But really, I give a lot of credit to Trinity Western and Axe and to Randy and his team, because in a way, this is a renaissance, even this kind of conference on small groups. I haven't seen this for a little while. So I'm very encouraged and grateful to be part of it. My topic today it's kind of a niche topic. It's kind of a specialty topic. So you guys are special because you've come. And it's a bit more technical. I have a feeling I sat through, of course, some of you were there, the session to do with missional communities today downstairs in the other building. And that was a very stimulating talk and felt very much like it was on the edge and very innovative and all of that, those kinds of things. I don't want to say mine is boring by comparison. It's hopefully no. But I am more in the category of what I would call traditional small group programs in the average church. I hope I'm speaking to people that are involved with such programs. I hope that's why you're here. And either leading a group or perhaps coordinating the whole program or coaching maybe several groups, that kind of thing. That's the target of this. And the focus specifically within the traditional small group program is on how to deal with groups when they're in trouble, when they're sick, when they're struggling. And I call the small group doctoring. I'm gonna work that doctoring metaphor to death, so hopefully you don't get tired of it. It's a very fruitful metaphor, I think, as you will see. Why is this idea of doctoring important? I want to start with some introductory comments. And I have given you the notes. These are the headlines, and you can make notes as you would like. For those of you watching by screen, this material is available on the website, and you'll have some information available to you to track these notes down. I'm supposed to say that. I'll also say a word about questions, by the way. I tend to be, you know, a freight train speaker. I'll just keep going until I hit an obstacle. So the obstacle, it would be a happy one of a question. Interrupt me. I'll try to remember to ask. And likewise, encourage those of you who are live streaming to, you know, to get your question in. And our able assistant will communicate that to me. And I'm very happy to answer questions. So do stop me at any point. I would say, don't even wait for a breath. Just interrupt me. I don't mind that. So why is this topic important, small group doctrine? Well, I first of all want to say that it's because the healthy community is at least as important in a church as the healthy individual. Part of the pastoral task or the shepherding task is to make sure the whole flock is healthy, not just or the sub-flocks, not just the individual sheep. It's more than the individual. And I want to say this is a worthwhile focus of attention in the leadership of the church. Why? Well, it's because the healthy small group is going to share the pastoral load. It's going to help bear the burden of the pastoral load and the discipling agenda in a church. And it's going to do that in a very fruitful way. I don't want to say automatically. In fact, my argument is we don't want to be automatic. We can't treat it as a passive thing that will just happen. We do need to pay attention to it. But once it is healthy and moving along, a tremendous amount of valuable growth, Christian growth, happens in these settings. So it's a tremendous place for us to invest, to make sure not only that we have a small group program, but we have a healthy small group program and healthy groups. That has to mean paying some attention to groups that have fallen off the rails, that have gotten into some difficulty as a group. We can't abandon them. The second thing I want to say is that Jesus himself spent time and energy as, I want to change the title, he was the great group physician, not just the great physician. In fact, to get ready for today, I did something I hadn't done before. I like reading through the gospel, the gospels or a gospel, with certain kind of lenses on. I do this a lot. And of course, it's a very fruitful place for us to go to be inspired in our Christian life and also in our Christian leadership. The lenses I put on to get ready for today was to read through. I chose Mark because it's short. I read through Mark and I said, so what can I learn from this gospel about Jesus' involvement with small groups? What kind of doctrine did he do? Do I have any evidence that this is important in the life of Christ? And it was very fruitful. I'm not going to review all that for you today, but I commend that to you. I think we all believe in discovery Bible study, don't we? You wouldn't be here otherwise. The things you discover are the things that you really take in and learn. So I'm not going to do all that work for you. I commend that homework to you. I'll give you one little tidbit. This is from Mark 9. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" Okay, this is not a happy moment for the disciples. No, not happy at all. They thought he hadn't heard. But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all." He took a little child whom he placed among them. Taking the child in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me." I love this little story. Yes, Jesus is ministering to individuals there who were doing the arguing, but you notice that it wasn't any particular individual. A couple chapters later, we're going to have a couple wanting to be on Jesus' left and right hand, and they get special attention by name. Here we have no names. It's the group. It's a small group. This is a small group problem. And Jesus takes time to give a proper perspective to the group about leadership and about the posture of service that you need to have in a group, rather than wanting to be on the pedestal. And he even goes further and says something about the little child who needs to be welcomed. The little child, of course, a symbol of the least and the lost, the kind of very marginalized in that culture, hardly noticed. When Jesus does notice them, it becomes a scandal sometimes. You know the stories. So this is a symbol of the posture the group is supposed to have, not only to one another and how they lead and serve, but also their posture outward. He builds that in into this, what is small group training. But more than small group training, it's actually small group doctrine, because it was coming out of a pathology that the group had. So he's being here, I believe, the small group physician. Let's not miss these. It's very easy to notice only his encounters one-to-one, but keep that lens on next time you read through Mark or any of the Gospels. How is Jesus being the physician to the group? And I hope that will encourage you. My third point about why this is important is that small groups do get into trouble. This is a truism. It's a universal truth that groups get into trouble. In fact, I'm going to say something very strong. I believe every group gets into trouble. My proof of this will come later, but I'll give you a hint. Groups get into trouble even when they do their job well. In fact, sometimes it's because they do their job well. If that seems mysterious, I will come back on it in a minute. I want to say that small group doctoring is as complex as soul care, as working with people in a counseling setting or a spiritual direction setting. I believe it's just as complex, maybe even more. Here's a formula. If you have N members in a group, some of you know some of these formulas. I'm a bit of a math geek. So if you have N members, the number of relationships in that group, some people say it's N times N minus 1 divided by 2, but that's not right. It's N times N plus 3 divided by 2. Write that down. N times N plus 3 in brackets divided by 2. The reason I get a much bigger number, exponential number there, is because I believe it's not just our relationship with each other, but it's also our relationship with ourself that we're bringing into the group, and also everyone's relationship with God. That's all the relationships going on in a small group. That's complex. And that's why I believe the doctrine skills that we need to bring to working with small groups are actually very subtle and challenging, and that's why I hope you're here to learn something about that. All right, I think that's enough. I could say a lot more sort of why we're here sort of things, why I hope you're here, and why you would be motivated, but let's just move on. My second point, well, let me just, I'll pause though. I promised to pause when I remembered it. I don't know if there's any questions online or anyone from the room yet, just as a sort of framework of why this is an important topic. Any comments, your own story, or any clarifications? Are you excited? Even though it's after lunch? Nothing? Okay.
What is N times N plus 3 divided by 2?
Okay. Let me illustrate. Say there are three people in your group. You have a group of three, a triplet type of small group. The formula to figure out how many relationships are in that group, what's the formula? 3 times N plus 3, that's 3 plus 3 is 6, so it's 3 times 6 is 18, right? You with me? Divided by 2, there are 9 relationships. Let me illustrate. With the three people, they each have a relationship with each other, 3. They each have a relationship with themselves, 3. They each have a relationship with God, 3. Adds to 9. Sorry, I've thrown everyone off with my math. Don't worry about the math. My point is, there's a tremendous number of relationships. It goes up exponentially as you add people to a group. That's my main point. Sorry about the math. I'm going to get in real trouble from Chris later. He's going to bug me about that. All right. Who is involved with doctoring and how does it work? How does the doctoring encounter happen? Right. I want to give you some suggestions. First of all, a concerned party, someone who's concerned about something in the group, comes and explicitly gives you the presenting problem that the group is dealing with, the struggle point in the group. Or they may hint at it. They may say it indirectly. And what we need to recall is that this presenting problem that's going to be communicated somehow is sometimes not the, it's the presenting problem, but not the root problem. The same thing in medicine. Doctors learn this, right? The person comes and says, I've got this, but they want to dig around and find out what the real source is. That's an important thing to remember so that we don't get too distracted right away by the thing that you first hear about. So, for instance, people may come and say people aren't showing up to a group regularly. People aren't coming regularly to the group. And they'll summarize it as, it hurts here, doctor. We seem to have a commitment problem. It hurts here, right? They point out what they think is the problem. But as a good group doctor, you will not be fooled by this. You will be automatically thinking this. People's needs aren't being met and their gifts are not being expressed. They have a problem with not having made a very good small group contract in the beginning. See, you will translate. Or at least you will have a hypothesis you can test out. Now, you may not be right. But at least you will start off thinking, well, this is what they're telling me, but it may not be the final thing we're going to get at. Who tells you? Well, it may be the group leader. It may be a member talking to you. Sometimes it may be the whole group. And what I mean by that, you may be visiting the group, and you may observe something. That's what I mean by them telling you. They tell you indirectly, by how they operate. You observe it. I'll come back to that one. A final possibility is you may hear from a third party. Well, pastor or group coordinator or deacon or elder, whoever you might be, do you know about this group and what they're doing? Okay, that does happen, I'm sad to say. Maybe they're well-intentioned. It's usually very inaccurate information, and usually tinged with quite a bit of judgment. And who is getting this information? Well, you may be the pastor. I call the pastor the general practitioner, that you're that kind of doctor, because you have to do everything, right? Maybe you're in a smaller church, and on top of everything else, you're also the small group coordinator, small group program coordinator, so you may be hearing it. You may be a dedicated program coordinator, either on staff or volunteer, maybe a board member. You may be a coach. If you have the privilege of being in a large enough setting or a well-developed enough setting, you may have actually identified small group coaches who are working with, say, four or five small groups in a particular area of the city or that kind of thing. More elaborate programs have to think about those kind of things. So you may have that delight that you're only overseeing two or three groups, four or five maybe, and you might be the recipient of the information. So that's the communication. You have someone knows something or is concerned about something, and they're coming to a responsible party. The one exception is where you visit the group, and they don't really tell you anything. That's rare that the whole group would start telling you something bad about the group. In fact, this idea that you would visit the group and kind of automatically know that something's wrong, that's quite rare. You know why. You can guess. People go on their best behavior, you know, when the coach is visiting, or especially the pastor. Sometimes it's either their best behavior or very unnatural behavior. Sometimes the behavior even is worse than their normal group life. Okay, it gets very stiff, and you can make the evaluation. Oh, these guys are like robots. I need to come in and really help these people. They don't share at all. But on a normal evening, when you, the outsider, right, is not there, they're actually just fine. So you have to be very careful about the analysis by visitation approach. By the way, in medicine, they call this the white coat effect. I'm old enough that I have to occasionally get my blood pressure done. Maybe everyone has had that experience. It's normal for a checkup, of course. It's very well documented in medicine that there's a certain increase in your blood pressure just because the white coat's in front of you, the doctor. They call it the white coat effect. You may have heard of this. And doctors adjust for that. You can't adjust down too low, though. I mean, sometimes you really do have high blood pressure. I'm sad to say. But sometimes a little elevated, the doctor will say, well, I know why, because the person's nervous because they're here in the doctor's office. Well, this happens in small group life, too. So now you have a good term for that. It's the white coat effect. You go in as the official person. Everyone gets very uptight. So that's something about the communication flow, where the information comes from that will kick your doctoring response into action. I say that's sort of the passive side. That's where people come to you. The more active side is where you're doing, this is under item two, where you're using evaluation tools. There's the informal kind. I call this the informal checkup. How is your group going? How often should you ask this? All the time. It's part of your job. This is such a critical job. Lobby, bump into someone in this supermarket, anywhere. Perhaps you're in some other church meeting with the person. It doesn't matter. Anywhere. If you know that they're involved with a small group and your job is a coach or a coordinator, ask. Ask all the time. How's your group going? The more formal checkup is where in certain settings, maybe in a training setting or maybe a coaching if you're a coach of four or five groups, you may have a regular series of appointments with your facilitators. Go to Starbucks, sit down. You could use a formal tool or inventory. I've actually given you one that I developed. It's attached to your notes. I'm going to have you write on this one, and then you're going to think, I won't have an original, but I have blank ones up here you take afterwards, okay? So you have ones to use in your setting. Or later you can print them off from online. What I'd like you to do is to go to your final page, the appendix. It's called the doctor's checkup. This is the small group interaction part, guys. Warning, you're used to this. You're group people. You can handle this. Yes? You're excited? What I want you to do is to think about your current small group that you're in. I'm assuming everyone is in a small group, of course. Or a recent group, if you're not in one now. Or a memorable group, maybe even an infamous group, okay? Maybe the group that you're glad that you're not in anymore, okay? You choose the example. I'll give you freedom. If you are in a group, though, I would kind of prefer you to steer that way to your current group, but that would be the most useful thing. And then use this inventory. Now, the way it works is there are 10 categories here. You see the headlines. You circle the statement about that category that's the closest, that describes your current group or the group that you're using as your example, the closest. Let me give you the leadership one first. Under leadership, in the leadership of your small group that you're thinking of, is which is true? A domineering leader in charge, okay? Circle that if that's true. Two, the mentality is anarchy, no leader. We don't want to have a leader because the last group we were in had a domineering leader in charge. Okay, so maybe it's number two. Number three, there's a designated leader or a group coordinator that is recognized. Okay, and it's spoken of in those terms. We have a coordinator in our group, but they're not the dominant leader. Number four, other leadership gifts are being recognized and employed in the group explicitly. You've identified multiple leaders, okay, in the group. And the last one is that new small groups and coordinators are actually being spawned and generated out of your group. There has been an experience, or there will be soon an experience, where you've actually prayed for some new leaders to go out of your group and start a new group, that kind of thing. Okay, that evolution is, if not happening, is going to happen. You see it coming. Okay? So that's the first one. Your assignment is to circle which one? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is the closest to the reality in yours, okay? Then work through the rest. This is one of these things you would... I'm sorry, there's going to be math again. This is the last math in the seminar, I promise. You're going to add up your numbers. Okay, that'll be your score for the group. And then we'll talk about how to interpret it. All right, any questions? Clear? Have fun.
What does contract mean?
All right, good question. Any clarification question, because I'm not taking the time to exegete the whole tool, so I'll wait for you to stumble and then you ask me exactly this way. Contract is my term for what sometimes people call the small group agreement or small group covenant, that kind of language. It's the formal, usually written down or maybe memorized at least, the things, the values that are important to our group, the things we're going to do for the next few months together, that agreement that a group makes. I hope most people will be familiar with that idea. Contract is a term that some people use for that, and that's the term that I'm using here. So, all right. Yeah, you may stumble over some others because it's kind of cryptic, and I'll be taking the questions. All right.
For number 5 in contract, it says in a group over 2 years old, the clause to end in 6 months included. Does that mean that the group is over 2 years old and the contract expires in 6 months? Or what does that mean?
Number 5 under contract is, and this only applies when the group is a little older, like it's been going for at least 2 years, but that at that, it's gone over 2 years, but they, in their latest time when they've written out a contract or an agreement, they have said, we're going to end in 6 months.
The group?
Yes. They've explicitly said that they're planning to end. They're going to plan to end well. Yeah, well, that's the implication, yeah. So yes, it's a planned ending. Is built in. I'm rating that as 5.
So you have a dissolution in the group?
Yes. The group is coming to an end.
Okay.
It's at least 2 years old, and they have an explicit plan to come to an end. All right. And you folks in Screenland, I hope you will use this tool yourself, following the same guidelines, and if you have the privilege of being with others, you can also talk about it afterwards in the way that we're going to hear in the class. If you're puzzling over any of the short cryptic language, just ask me and I'll fill it out a bit. Yes?
What do you exactly mean by concert? The desire to be able to look like you reach this cycle?
Which headline?
Number development.
And what number?
Three.
Four.
Three.
Four.
Well, number three, then number four.
Okay.
Under development.
Right. Okay.
Just before, can you, when someone asks a question,
yeah, I'm supposed to.
Picked up?
I apologize. I'm supposed to repeat the question. Yeah.
Thank you.
This is the quiet part of our seminar where people are working on this worksheet. I assume the editing will happen here. I don't know. But for those of you listening on the screen, the question is, under the development heading, what do some of these things mean? I'll talk about three and four. So under development, number three, a formal review and recontracting at specified intervals. What this means is that at the very beginning, the group, from the first contract, they've decided that that the contract includes a clause where they're going to reopen the contract and talk about it. They have a set time to do that, and that they're going to be quite clear when they review. It won't be haphazard. It'll be a very thorough kind of review. And then they will what we call recontract. It may mean exactly the same contract, but they at least make that conscious decision. We still like the game plan we were using. We're going to continue, or we want to make certain adjustments. I'm saying that you rate that as three if you're building some of that thinking into how your group operates. So a regular review and recontracting. Okay. Number four. Number four is just the next step. It's saying, as part of that review and recontracting, we're going to be explicit about wanting to go deeper. We'll think about all the small group components and try to go further. In other words, if we've been sharing at a certain level, we want to share more deeply, and we'll have a plan to do that. If we've been studying a certain way and it's gotten a bit stale, we will have a plan to refresh our Bible study in some way. So that's four, where in other words, you don't just rubber stamp and say, well, we like our contract, we'll just carry on. No, you get serious and say, no, it's when we get more detailed about what we want to do as a group, we will make more advances as a group. So that's what number four means. I bury a lot in that one little sentence. I'm glad to explain it. Yeah. I'm feeling bad for the organizers of this of the video session here, because I'm not sure people usually have this much quiet time. I assume they'll have some plan. How many people have got as far as nurture? Oh my goodness. Oh good. Okay, good. This won't be graded, so maybe go a little faster and make a quick assessment rather than really wrestling too much. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, good, done. Bless you.
Have you ended up yet?
No.
Yeah.
What is the ending?
The numbers are the score. So one counts as one, two as two. So you should get a score. There are 10 categories. So the highest score would be 50, and the lowest number you can get would be 10. Well, I don't want to take too much time. I'm going to say we'll give three more minutes only for the circling and adding up. Yes.
I have a question that we can address after everyone is finished. I noticed in some of the questions here, you know, the concept of having a contract and, you know, a term for that contract is...
It's assumed. And the implication, I'm encouraging it, yes.
Yeah.
That is true.
Okay, so
can
you address the...
Pros and cons?
Pros and cons of that one. Like, why is it encouraged here in this...
Sure.
Checkout.
Sure. I think there will be a natural time to bring that up, to come back. The question was, some of the questions explicitly or implicitly are promoting the idea of a contract, a clear, explicit group agreement, and that lasts for a season or a term, and then you reopen it and think about it again for another cycle or season of the group's life. Are there pros and cons to that? Why is that being promoted here? I think it will. Some of the answers to that will come out in some of my other comments when we get into some of the doctoring. But if not, then come back to me on it.
Yeah.
All right, I will stop the this exercise. I'll have to rethink about when we're doing this with taping. I don't know how you felt about this. I won't ask people to say what their numbers are, but here's how to interpret the results. There's a little code at the bottom. Whatever your number is, you measure it against these three categories. If a group is measuring above 35, you could think that that group is doing quite well. That would be a thumbs up checkup from the doctor. Between 35 and 20, the group needs some attention. And if the group measures below 20, they need what I call intensive care. Okay, they need instant hospitalization. So again, think about your own situation and whether a tool like this, and maybe I know you have seen tools. There's many online and in books. I've developed them myself. Small group evaluation tools. This tool it's a little bit more focused. And it is specifically promoting an ongoing contact, a sort of client-caregiver contact to inspire that. And you could use this tool in this kind of setting with your group leaders, or you could do it, if you're really brave, in a whole group on a group visit. That way they would be giving you some explicit information. They need to sort of know what they're getting into. There's different ways. You could do it, like I say, in a one-to-one coaching context. You could have the leader that you're coaching go through this, and it could lead to some conversation. Let me talk about the client contact before I then talk about some of the pathologies. I want to make sure we get to those, and also that'll give me a chance to talk more about contracting. The contact can happen in a couple different ways. One is what I call the doctor's office, and that is the situation where you're coaching. Usually it's not your office. Hopefully you go to Starbucks or something more informal. Usually that's a better for conversation. And you're working with the group leader or leaders in that setting. And something comes up, either through this explicit tool or just because you ask, how's your group going? My main challenge in those kind of situations is before you jump in and say, well, I'll come and fix your group. Okay, don't say that. The first goal is to actually empower this person to be your medical student. Okay, they need to feel empowered and encouraged and equipped to go and do that work themselves. So the very tools I'm about to run through very quickly, the sort of interventions to bring, the best thing of all is to train your apprentice to do that work. So I want to encourage that. Yes, there's a room for the specialist. Okay, I'm really working this medical metaphor. I can't help myself. But it's a very pregnant metaphor. It really works. There is a room for the specialist in certain cases. But the best thing is to allow your group leader or leaders to become community health workers, where they're doing that work in the community, where they observe things that are going off course and can bring it back and have the confidence and the equipment to do that. So I hope... What you would do, for instance, is do some of this teaching with them, even in that setting, one-to-one, and just reinforce. The other possibility, of course, is what we call the house call. This is where you are, in fact, at the group, the actual small group evening, or whenever the meeting is. And my main caution in those cases is to tread very carefully, okay, in those in those encounters. The attitude you should bring in is definitely what I call open-ended and non-judgmental. One reason to be open-ended and non-judgmental is what I said earlier. Sometimes the presenting problem isn't the core problem. And sometimes the group leader or the keen member who's sort of, you know, giving you some insight about the group, they actually have it wrong. Or, that's saying it too, that sounds very judgmental. I shouldn't say it that way. Maybe they're right, but no one else in the group agrees they're right. That's the critical thing. And that's why you have to go in very carefully to these encounters with groups. I think some of you have already had enough experience in your life as leaders to know that these can be sensitive encounters where you need to tread carefully. My thing I always do is I don't assume even that people knew I was coming, right? Now, that, in other words, when you show up, where does wisdom come from? Experience. Where does experience come from? Bad experience. And this has happened to me, where you end up at a group, the keen member or the group leader or both have wanted you to be there to save the day, but no one knew you were coming. Or why you were coming was misrepresented. You know, it's, they just want to come and, you know, visit with us. And you're there with a very clear agenda. You know that this group is falling apart. I need to come in and help. So the first thing I do when I visit a group is I go around and say, so why do you think I'm here? I actually find out, and it can be very, very revealing. I'll never forget one time when I showed up at a small group early on, and I was very excited about group programs and small groups, and very dedicated to it, and thought, well, it can only be good if I come. I walk up to the front door, and someone who I had not talked to, not the direct inviter, but just someone else in the group who knew me, they open the door and they go, oh, the small group destroyer is here. No lie. That's actually a quote. Because I had developed the reputation at that point of taking groups off life support. You know, the groups that have lasted 1 year too long. Those groups. You know the groups I'm talking about. You've been in those groups. And of course, I wouldn't literally go in and say, you must close. That's foolish pastoring. But, you would go through processes where it would then become clear to them that they did. But this news had spread as a relatively new leader in this programs that had become very stale, that inevitably some groups are going to come to an end. You may have experienced this. The group destroyer is here. Well, this was not a happy moment. Clearly, there had been no news given about why I was coming or what the purpose of it was. So we have to treat this house call thing very carefully. Beware. Now, you're either with your group leader or group member, or maybe the group is in a group training session all together as a group. It's an excellent way to do group training, by the way. Train whole groups. That's not my point in my seminar, but I'll throw it in for free. Train whole groups. Don't just train leaders. So you may have a session where the whole group is here and you're discovering some things can help them. Or it could be a coaching session. Whatever the situation, you now have the problem in front of you. What do you do? I want to run through what I call 7 pathologies. All right. Before I launch in on this, it'll be fairly rapid fire. I admit that this is a 101 medical training. All of these things could be talked about much more deeply, but I want to give you an overview. But before I do that, any questions up to this point? Other than the one I postponed. Yes?
What if, the group member doesn't want to dissolve their whole group, even though it's pretty close to the end? What do you normally do?
So this is, the question is, what about when a member or members in the group don't want to discuss? Are you talking about a situation where a person's been invited in, like the coordinator of the program or a coach has been invited in, but people really don't even want them there? That situation?
Or maybe they understand they have some kind of issue
Yes.
The group, but
right.
It's just that they want to have the group continue.
Everything's fine. Yes, this is very common, what you're describing. The question again is, specifically, you go into a group, they even begin to see a little bit that the group has some difficulties, but they're still determined it's going to carry on, even if the wise thing is to remove the life support. A very common problem. And I don't have an easy answer. The fact is that group will come to an end if it's in that kind of trouble. The question is it going to end well or end badly? And your job is only to come and help it end well and with celebration. That's your assignment. But like in actual medicine, you cannot help someone that doesn't want to help themselves. I mean, they have to not only see that they have a problem, but be participating in the solution and be open to some solutions, to at least try some solutions. If they don't, then, well, it will solve itself eventually. Then you will have other problems. You will have all of the discouraged people that you then have to deal with. That's what you're trying to avoid. You can't always avoid it. I'm sorry, that's my... Because to... The damage that's caused by, something a bit more like, okay, then I'm going to send the elders in to visit you or something like that. That kind of damage usually is worse even. So you have to pick your damage and what's going, But my experience has been with the right tools, you can improve the chance that people are going to see what they need to do. So let me, and this is something else urgent, I'll move to some of those. But very good question, and I've had that experience. So diagnosing and treating small group illness. I have seven... diseases I want to mention. One is, I call it, and sorry for the bad puns, extendinitis, okay? Extendinitis is when the group has outlived itself. It's outlived its usefulness. This is a group, usually the numbers have dwindled somewhat. And another thing that sometimes is true in such a group, these are the symptoms, I'm giving you the symptoms now, usually they come up with quite a large range of excuses to put off regular meeting. They sometimes are delaying getting together. Usually the complaints about a group that's lasted too long are different from every member. The things that they're concerned about, they vary if you actually interviewed them individually. And often the tone has gotten a bit personal, a bit negative, like, why haven't you been showing up? Okay, that kind of fairly direct sort of challenge. And the final example or symptom is a very practical one. I call this taking the small group history. Like a doctor does, you always want to find out what is the history. And the simple fact is that these are groups that have lasted 2 or 3 years and had sometimes 2 or 3 good years, in fact. Quite productive and helpful years together. Well, of all the things I teach in small group dynamics, this sometimes is one of the more controversial ones, this whole idea that groups outlive their usefulness. And for the basic nurture fellowship group, what I call the basic nurture fellowship, the basic small group in traditional churches, that this usually is after 2 or 3 years. Sometimes there's controversy about this, but this is my experience. And my argument about this, let me start with that. The counter argument, which I then will argue back against, is it seems very robotic and anti-friendly to say that this very special group where I have all my close relationships and we've been together and invested in each other, that it's going to come to an end. It seems like, what, you're trying to break friends apart. That's the most common resistance. And my comment back is, if you actually think you still need to be in this small group to maintain your friendships with these people, then that is that's a faulty belief. That's a belief that needs to be corrected. I am just texted my friend last night who had shoulder surgery. I've known him for almost 30 years. But we haven't been in a group for a long time. But we were in 2 or 3 very significant groups together. Our friendship got formed in a furnace, very tight. And now decades later, we're still the best of friends. My argument is that small groups, basic small groups, in a church are designed to create friends. They're friendship factories, I call them. But they don't need, you don't need a small group to maintain that friendship. So I say that when a group has reached a point, and we'll explain why it reaches this point, it's actually good news. When a group has reached the point where the group, it's not saying anything bad about the friendships, it's saying something about the group dynamic and the purpose and function of that group has run out of steam. That it's time for them to write the last contract, the last contract. In 6 months, we're going to end well. And they talk about how to do that. And if you're not sure how to do that, then you can get starting and ending a small group. I'm the only person that's ever written a book about how to end a small group. There's many books about how to start small groups. But this is at least as important, to know how to end well. How do you help people see that they have this disease of extendinitis? Well, usually what I do when I show up to, or perhaps we're working in a setting like a seminar, I say to each one, and I have someone record so I can really focus. I don't want to be writing. Have a recorder, and I have everyone say what you know, in the group that you'd like to be part of right now, what would you like to get out of that group, and what would you like to contribute to that group? And we go around. And when the group has lasted 2 or 3 years, almost invariably there's very different stories around the room at that point. Now, the other time when this can happen is at the beginning of a group, when you do your first contract. And I'll start getting back to this question about why a contract's important. I don't think there's any value in letting these things be mysterious in group life. Because there are so many different group purposes, gifts to be explored, targets of mission, ways to do Bible study, levels of sharing that people want. Frankly, there are some people that want to have groups where they can show up or not show up whenever they want. You can find people that want to be in a group like that. There are even value for groups like that. But there's other people that would hate to be in a group like that, at least at this point in their life. There's no advantage to not getting that information out. And that's my simple argument for contracting. It's an explicit way of saying, what do we want to be about? When you do this after 2 or 3 years, generally there's quite a variety. And the argument I then make to the group, or the appeal I make is, guys, this, because often they start getting very quiet. Okay, in the sharing, they go, oh. And it's all written, they can't avoid it. They can review it later. And they go, oh, well, we have failed miserably. Look at this lack of consensus. Look at this lack of unity. And I always say, stop. What are you talking about? This is because the group has done its job. People are, you know, they're expressing different gifts that have been explored in this group, and they want to use them more. And some mission target and vision that's been stirred up. And maybe some things even in the group that haven't gone so well, but they want to go deeper and try that again in a way, and perhaps sharing, perhaps it's counseling one another, perhaps it's this, even today, maybe it's even the Bible study. Okay, even today, people might want to study the Bible more deeply, or who knows what it might be. But it's the group life and what they've done together that has created whatever is true for those people at that point. And if there's variety, why can't we celebrate that and say, well, we've actually generated a whole bunch of life here by the Holy Spirit that now can go in different directions. Not 10 different directions. Sometimes people will reform. 3 or 4 people will want to do the same kind of group. Another 3 or 4 get excited about going to the West End, for those of us in that other seminar, and you know, plant a meta-community. Or I mean, who knows what God will stir up? And so I try to say, folks, this is a celebration point. Your friendships are not going to end. If they're going to end when the group ends, then you're in more trouble than you think, okay, number one. Number two, some of you may even stay together in group, but not all of you, because there's so much, there's different things stirring up here. Why can't you make your last 6 month contract a celebration of that and a settling of that, a kind of acknowledgement of that? What I like to do, for instance, if some people are very excited about Bible study, I say, well, I'm going to let you lead the studies now for the next 6 months. You can really spread your wings. And if someone says, I really want to be in a deeper prayer group with people, I'll say, well, can you be our minister of prayer, you know, for the next 6 months? And, you know, you can play with some of those mechanisms that actually turn that last season of the group into a beautiful time. And, of course, you always end with a party at the end. Yes.
I have a question about, you mentioned, you know, removing life support and ending a group. And you have here a list of, you know, small group pathologies. And I just want to ask, you know, which one of these, or what are the criteria that would lead you to, like, prescribe, okay, you know, we should end this group, right? Like, when would you prescribe that, and
right.
what happens after you end the group?
Right. So the question is, when, and by the way, I shouldn't use the metaphor of life support, because that's like the elders coming and saying, you must end. But yes, I like you. You're picking up on the metaphor very well and saying, when would I prescribe, very good, the closing of the group, right? It's exactly this disease that prompts this response the most, okay? It's this having lasted too long. Lasted too long does not mean the group has gotten stale, although it may feel that way. Generally, it means the group has done its job. I want to turn it more positively like that. I want to say to people that for this kind of group, 2 or 3 years is the shelf life. You're there, and let's just find out if that's true. And we do this exercise of finding out what people want in their next group, which can be this group if they carry on, or let's find out. If, in fact, everyone goes around and says, no, we're still, they actually are completely in concert, in, you know, lined up, you can go, well, then you're kind of stuck. Then you're wondering, why is this group stale if they're so, you know, excited? Maybe then all it is that you come up, as often is the case, with they want some ideas on how to refresh certain aspects of the group life. Then maybe you're an idea person, right, at that point. But usually after 2 or 3 years, no. I must say I have a mixed motive in promoting this too, because as group coordinators, if that's your role, you know, one of our ongoing jobs is how do we get new groups, right? How is the group program, how is it lively, right? So there's turnover and openness to new people, and how do new groups get formed, new kinds of groups, mission groups, prayer groups, various service groups. How does that all happen? Well, it has to be through this mechanism, not of church groups splitting, I never use that term, not groups, you know, dying, you know, like, I hate that vision of the seed dying and then it will spark new life. No, I want to celebrate the life that has already happened in the group and say that this is the seed of new life, but that this is already new life that is about to happen, and have people see that vision. It does require them to think beyond themselves a little bit, think about the whole church and the kingdom, but it also allows them just to get honest about themselves and to not feel, I'm kind of empowering them to not second guess if they have something stirring in them that, oh man, I'm kind of a traitor to this group, you know, I'm not in line. No, but to instead allow the group to bless the differences at that point, celebrate those, and see that as the seed of something brand new.
Do you have any example of that? Some group closing and then separating into some new one and some new life. Do you have any experience in that?
It just happened recently in my own church that we don't have a lot of groups. It's a sort of new vision for the church that I'm in, and it hopefully will grow. The question was, do I have examples of this happening? This actually happened in a group where they'd been going for quite a while, and then they actually asked this question. They actually only asked it about one specific clause in the contract. They said, who here wants to be in a group where we meet regularly and see each other regularly, people commit, high attendance commitment, and who here wants to sort of float in and out and bring anyone they want and, you know, more relaxed style. And the group divided right down the middle, and they recognized that they had two groups in the room. Now, that can happen at the beginning of a group's life. That's uncomfortable because they're just getting started, but better to get honest, even if it's a few weeks in, get two groups. At the end of a group, 2-3 years in, it's evolution. It's where people are at in their life sometimes, the stage. Sometimes what's happened is people have gone and joined other groups where those sorts of needs are being met in other ways, and now they don't need it here. And anything can happen. That just happened. So, yes, this question of what people's expectations are, both for receiving and giving, that's the two, how they want to use their gifts, and also what sorts of things, what sorts of life do they need to have built into their life, just ask that. And it's amazing. I say this in my notes, the best kind of discovery is self-discovery. In other words, if the group gets it, is so much better than the expert coming in and saying, you know, you need to end. I always lean towards that. Now, I'm in serious trouble. I'm obviously need to watch my time. So I'll just pick up the pace a little and try to give you tidbits on the last six things. Obesity, big problem in the real world, also in small group life. This is where the group is too big. Now, what is the symptom? How do you discover this? Because in the group, if you ask this question, how many people do you have in your group? It usually goes like this. They'll say, we have about 15 or 20 members on the list. Okay, but not everyone comes all the time because they know that's too many. But they want to soften it and go, well, but they don't always come. So we always have a stable core of people. This is the kind of language. The fact is, though, this so-called stable core, they're very discouraged about this lack of commitment from other people, if they're honest. Sometimes it's because they didn't contract very well on this matter. They didn't get explicit about it, and it was just sort of floating in the air what the value was, and no one ever talks about it. They don't want to upset the apple cart, especially at the beginning. At the beginning of a group, everyone wants to keep everything very nice, you know, and don't want to get too particular. But it doesn't serve you to get vague about this, because then what happens is unspoken contract is usually default. The default is loose attendance, bring anyone you want anytime. I have to say I made this very mistake in the group I'm in right now. A rookie mistake. I don't have time to tell that story, but I feel this pain. I mean, where I kind of trespassed against the contract about just having someone come. So this kind of group too big thing is where sometimes it's this weak contracting around how regular you want people to come and what kind of size of group that you want. The normal pattern in such groups is that you have a few meetings with too many people, and then the group settles into the number it should be. That's been my experience. The trouble is it's a different people every week. I don't know if you've been in groups like that. It's always eight people, just not the same eight people. And why is that? Because eight is actually the right number for the time that you have. I said no more math. I'm going to give you some math. Sorry. There's some math people here. About three members per half hour of meeting is about right. So in other words, our group right now that I'm in, we meet for an hour and a half because we're in a home with little children and they just had a new baby, so we're very clear about the time. By the way, you can actually end a group on time. It is possible. Yeah. We end after an hour and a half, and so the formula would be about nine people. We currently had eight people. It's just the right number. If you meet for 2 hours, I'll let you have 12 people. You see? And this is all because of what we call air time. If you have too many people, the quiet people will not talk. They never get an opportunity. You have to create space and room for people to interact. And so there's a certain... Smaller is usually better, okay? Not too small, but smaller is usually better. I find that groups will find the right level in terms of size. The intervention when you're dealing with this kind of size issue in a group is, again, to go back to the contract and the controlling assumptions. Sometimes when people insist on having a large group, you know, a lot of people coming in and out, open, no real control, it's because they say Jesus would never have a closed group. It's very unspiritual, you know, to you can just point them to the gospel, right? Jesus, in fact, did have closed group. Yes, he also had a porous border, larger group, yes. But there were, for certain purposes, he said, these are the folks I'm working with. And Jesus, I think, gives us permission to think about the numbers that you want to have in your group. How do you put a group on a diet? Well, the main way is to ask people to get honest about the kind of attendance commitment they want. And the commitment to sharing and leaving room for sharing in the group, good participation in the Bible study. Get honest about that. It may mean that you have to have the meeting like my friend had and say, let's find out what the commitment is here. And you may end up, you have two kinds of groups in the room. And you have to do some surgery there and divide it up. Or another possibility, if they all want to stay together, too large, then you teach them about subdividing, you know. Subdividing is the small group leader's friend. I use it all the time. You can do it in Bible study, you can do it in the sharing. Here's the clue, though. You always subdivide with the same members in the subgroup. Formal, same members in the subgroup. Because then it's like a mini group in the group. You're getting all the benefits that the small group has then. Okay, we're in serious time trouble. Number three, honeymoonitis is the group. Yes. Oh, well.
What's the best number for one group?
Okay, best number for one group. No. It depends on the amount of time. So you can go larger than eight if you have a full 2 hour meeting, 2.5 hours, go up to 12 people. But I like hour and a half groups. I want people that want more by the end. I want them not ready to leave, and then we leave, hungry to come back. So I go 90 minutes. We're pretty strict about that. Maybe if we do a meal, we go 2 hours. But if it's not with dinner, we'll just do 90 minutes. And I find that with 90 minutes, 8-9 people, perfect. I have a little poem about that. No time for that. Okay, honeymoonitis. The group is too nice. too nice. The cult of the superficial.
Doesn't want to get out.
And here's the thing. I'll very quickly say how to deal with this. Usually, again, it's a failure of contracting. Okay, this is my favorite tool, contracting. And a group at the beginning, because they don't want to upset the apple cart, they want the group to work, they'll be very vague and not very clear. Sometimes you have to recontract, not 6 months, not a year later, sometimes a couple weeks later. Do it again and say, okay, now let's get serious. What do we really want? Because then people know no one's getting cold feet, no one's leaving too quickly, and they can get more honest about the last three groups they were in that were very unsatisfying. Here's what I really need and want in a group. So you sometimes have to come back and ask those questions early. That can maybe help deepen it. The other thing I mentioned about regular recontracting and reviewing, make sure every time you recontract, go a little deeper. So in my group, for instance, I was concerned that we were sharing kind of superficially in the first year or so. And so in year two, we started with what I call 20 questions. Give me your email, I can email these to you. I should have brought them. I invented 20 questions that were, some of them were fun, some of them were kind of deep, and people had to do them as homework, and we had only one person share, because 20 questions is a lot. You probably don't even do a Bible study that night, because that's a lot of sharing. And some people went so deep. They prepared the assignment, and then they come in and they shared. And some people, it was so moving. I wouldn't do that in the first year, necessarily, especially with this group. But in year two, we just went, it's like on the car, you shifted down. And, you know, the engine was a whole different engine because of an explicit commitment to try something that was, I knew was going to be deeper and different. You can invent these things. That's part of the fun of being involved with small groups. Or there are 1 million resources online, as you know. So, all right. Oh. MPD, multiple personality disorder. The group has too many identities. I've already really referred to this. This is different than the multiple identities or purposes or visions at the end of a group's life, 2-3 years. This is at the beginning. You already have it. And you identify this in contracting, and you have to get honest enough to say, well, really, the good news is that we've clarified that there was more than one group in this room, and now we have two groups. The group coordinator would be very excited that we now have two where there's only one. And again, you try to make it a celebration, not a negative thing. That's the heart. It's just that there's different expectations for what kind of group they want to be in.
Are different point of views?
Yeah, about the group, but not judge. We don't judge it. Uh-huh. They're both valid. That's the point I'm making. There's some people that maybe they've not done in-depth Bible study for 10 years, and because they got burned out with doing it, but now they're hungry for it. But they may be the only person in that room that, you know, you have to find that out. That's contracting. Yep. Arrested development. The group is not growing. Well, I've really given you some suggestions already about that. That again, in it's about getting honest in the review at the end of contracts, right? And getting quite serious. That's if it's a whole group that needs to get serious. The biggest reason for a group not growing, though, is a domineering leader. So you need to make sure this is you're not the problem, first of all. Okay, be honest. You know that you have to make sure you're not that person. That's always a very sensitive question to have to examine, right? You answer every question. You talk, you know. I have a friend that says when the facilitator is talking, the learning is stopping. You know, the discovery is when people are sharing and giving their answers, and you have to model that as a facilitator. This is the hardest thing to intervene on as the outside helper, you know, the doctor. Why? Because often there's tremendous loyalty that's been built with this leader. Sometimes they serve great dinners. Their spouse puts on great dinners. Sometimes the members are younger and they love the food and they love the big home that they meet in. And the speaker always sits in a certain chair. No one else ever sits. You've been there. There's a certain chair they sit in. And no one wants to upset this. And you come in, you cannot take the you can't walk in and say, oh, you're a domineering leader. No, not only will the domineering leader hate you, the whole group will hate you. This is very hard doctoring. I'm dealing with such a person now in my church. I read this recently, and I went, oh, my, how can I send this to them? No, I can't do that. Because for lots of reasons, it's very sensitive. My main strategy is always this. Is to try to, rather than limit their activity, I try to make it even bigger. I try to become friends with that person, and this is exactly what I'm doing in my current church. Try to become friends, try to get close, and say, try to build in a vision for where they could go. Now, how exciting would it be if you apprenticed new groups out of this group that you are running? You know, I try to take them into a bigger place. If you try to take someone who wants to dominate and make them smaller, that usually doesn't work. Take someone who wants to have a leadership role and give them a bigger field, and sometimes that will release them. So this is sensitive, I admit. I don't have a perfect solution. The group is afraid of leadership is number six. And if you've been in a domineering leadership climate, it's easy to go to the place, well, everyone is the same. That's not the answer. There is a place for small group facilitation, and this is an easy fix. You just have to go to a group where everyone tries to do everything and we're all co-leaders or something like that, and you go, well, yes, that's good. You're using all your gifts. I believe everyone should lead. That's good. But there's a place for the facilitator to help guide the thing. And last but not least, narcissism. And this pathology is where the group is completely inward focused and does not have any mission. There's no other centeredness. And this is, again, quite challenging. The best solution here is the same thing I would say about all of these diseases, all of these pathologies, and I make the point in my closing comments, which I won't get to today, but you can see the outline. The point I make in the closing notes is that prevention is the best medicine. And it's hard to change an inward-focused group to outward-focused when they kind of get settled into that. And so, in a way, this is going against my doctoring metaphor. I almost think you need to be a prevention kind of, like a community health nurse. That's a better model, where you have to, from the very beginning, build the pattern that you want. You need to teach groups in their contracting to have an outward focus from the very beginning. At the least, they could build in a commitment to pray for each other, to reach out to their non-Christian friends, that we will name names of people in our circle that need to know Christ, and we will commit to pray for those names and bug you about those people. That's a simple starting point, but that can be enough to keep the outward thing fresh. A year later, you might be doing a major service project. Let me give you one last illustration of this. Sometimes it can get very big. We were in a small group, a special small group, that was designed to support one another when we had our first child. So everyone had one baby, young couples. We live in a culture, at least unfortunately sometimes in the West, in a culture where there's not that same support maybe from extended family. So we had to be extended family with each other to help difficult parenting years, you know. Eventually, we were together long enough, we bought property together that is used for a retreat center. Today, 25 years later, still going on. So my point is, when you start from the very beginning with an outward focus, and I won't go into all the stories about this group and how we had an outward focus at each point, eventually it can lead to quite large mission projects where you even spend money together, which is always scary. And so I want to give you that picture that it's really doctrine that has to happen at the very beginning, where the group has an outward focus. It is not narcissistic, not inward focus, and only absorbed with their own needs and the own life of the group. So I was a bit rapid fire. I said it was going to be overview, but I hope you see in that seven critical things that you might encounter in conversation with group leaders, group members, or when you visit the group, and where you can then have your doctor's bag ready, take out some of these tools, and help the group be healthy. Even if health means the group is going to come to an end formally as a group, to even see that, and maybe the final metaphor here would be resurrection. I mean, we don't believe in death as the final thing. It is resurrection that we're looking forward, even in group life, and all the amazing things God can do with the next groups that are going to come after that group is over. Thank you for paying attention. And
I just want to
yes.
ask a question, but
yes.
I just want to. We learned a lot, and I just want to use the metaphor. It's like you gave us some vitamins just for, you know, it's really helpful what you told us today.
Good, thank you. I appreciate that.
Vitamins for our Bible study.
Appreciate that feedback. I will use that metaphor. I like the vitamins. Again, I apologize. I managed the time a little badly, but thank you for your questions and your attention and for laughing at a couple jokes. I especially like that. So, thanks very much. And there are books available if you want to take a look. And enjoy the rest of your afternoon. You go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's also extra copies of the quiz thing if you guys want to take a blank page home. And Dan has a couple books here, 7 Myths About Small Groups, and Starting and Ending a Small Group. Let's see, this one is $7, this one is $5, or you can get the best of both worlds for $10.
The combo deal is
combo deal.
Yeah.
That's right. Are these available anywhere else?
I meant to mention, as I said in my earlier anecdote, I think Logos or one of the aggregators sells these books along with thousands of other books. It's that kind of package where you can get them. Regent College, they're out of print through InterVarsity Press, but Regent College reprinted the 7 Myths book, so it's available at Regent, but doesn't have the great cartoons. And I don't know if the cartoons are available in the online version either. So this is an appeal for the great cartoons. Okay, that's the bonus you're getting. Both of them have cartoons in them. But yes, through Regent for the 7 Myths book. And I'm not sure exactly where to get them in online. But there's like a package where you get hundreds of books. They're part of that. I think it might be Logos, that company.
About you not paying the GST of 5%. That is an extra bonus.
I actually have a few more things I want to clarify. I hope it's okay.
Not at all, and I appreciate your restraint because you saw I was in such trouble.
Yeah,
you were being kind to me.
Thank you. I wanted to ask, why can you say that the group already did its job? Is it... You know, is it going to be in the contract? Because the way I see it, you know, the purpose of a small group is, you know, to be there to, you know, walk together, you know, as you grow spiritually. Yes. But are you referring to, like, specific things? Like, say, okay, like what you mentioned about, you know, young family group. Like, okay, we're just here to be, you know, to have each other, you know, to go through this